So anyway, with that, let's go ahead and turn over to Revelation 12, because I do have something I want to say to us today. I want us to get this message and understand the depths of the message. but you probably didn't know that Satan and the devils have a holiday. And just kind of wondering, what do you think they do on that holiday? Well, I hear they have a devil of a time. My point today is this. We're celebrating a unique holy day of God. And we are celebrating the devil's holiday. Because right now, the devil is having a devil of a time. But there's coming a day when he'll be forced to take a vacation. And that's what we celebrate today. But what we celebrate today, like all of those days that God gives us, they aren't just prophetic, but they're showing us something spiritually, a way that we should be living. And to me, we live in an age now, if you read the news daily, with so many things happening, with natural disasters, with people killing, murdering, raping, and you know, the corruption that's in government and corporations. When you read this almost every day, it's so ironic that people will say the devil isn't real. And so many do. I mean, I went on several websites and just read what people think about the devil, and they just think it's all made up. And I remember the best answer, they have, of course, Yahoo Answers. And their best answer was, Satan doesn't really exist. But Eagle Spirit Ministries, I think, expresses what many believe today when they write this. The devil is not real. The devil is a concept which has been invented by man as a way to abdicate his responsibility for our fears and our insecurities. Any battle which we have with the devil is really a battle with ourselves, and no more than a battle with ourselves. The devil exists only in our conscious minds. Some people think the devil is a living creature, something with horns and a pointed tail and a cosmic criminal. It's actually a metaphor for our own animal minds. The devil's just a name for a force of deception in our lives, the adversary of God, the Antichrist, etc. It's the mind. It's the beast within, they say. It's so amazing to me. They believe Satan is simply a metaphor. Just a metaphor. People everywhere today, in America in particular, as I see it, are losing their faith in God and faith in the Bible as his written word. And with it, they are beginning to let go of any kind of concept of a real devil. As a result, they're not in any way prepared to resist his influence on us. And therein lies a major problem. As Charles Baudelaire said, a very famous French poet, he wrote this: the finest trick of the devil is to persuade you that he does not exist. And he is the one that authored this original statement. That is his best trick right now. I want you to think about this. It is so foolish for people to think that there is no devil or that he's a metaphor because of this. And I ask you, just think about it for a moment. The devil is the only real answer to why the world is in the state that it's in. Men are wicked and evil by their human nature, but they're not horribly twisted like the world we're seeing today. We see his influence everywhere. We believe in the scriptures. We believe in their prophecies because they've come true, and history proves it and affirms the Bible's authority. And those scriptures repeatedly speak about Satan the devil. And so I've asked you to turn to Revelation 12, and where it says in verse 9, that great serpent was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceives the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. And they are here, and they permeate and affect almost everything that we see in this world, except where God has limited them. And so the scriptures detail specifically of his existence and that he has deceived the world, and they really are worshiping him. And it's so ironic, they don't believe him, but people actually do worship him. And there's also on the internet places you can go to, site after site after site, that are people who are worshiping Satan. And as a wicked man, Aleister Crowley once said, "I serve my great master Satan." And that august council of his, composed of Beelzebub, Lucifuge, Asmodus, Belfogar, Baal, and Amalek, and Lilith, and Nema. Crowley wrote a book entitled The Book of the Law. Now this law, is it God's law? Of course. The Book of the Law is Satan's law. And his primary teaching, his whole philosophy, was able to be summed up in one sentence. And it's this, I quote, "Do what thy will. This is the whole of the law." Isaiah 14. That is his mantra. That is his philosophy. That is Satan's. And that has been translated to men today, broadcast all over the earth, so that so many believe it. So many believe it today. That is the philosophy that he formulated. And it is this: to put our desires above all else, to do what we want regardless of the cost, and in many cases the cost to others. Isaiah 14, verse 13, "For you have said in your heart," speaking of Lucifer, he was the first to formulate this philosophy, "I will ascend into heaven, I'll exalt my throne above the stars of God, I will sit also on the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north, I'll ascend above the heights of the clouds, I will be like the Most High." Genesis 3. Satan wanted to be like God. And the way that he could be like God, he couldn't be as powerful as God, but the way he could be like God was to determine what's right and what's wrong, that it would be him. He would do it. He would have his way. He would have God-like powers. And so he was able to infect one-third of the angels with this kind of thinking and this philosophy. And today, he influences all of mankind, cast down to the earth with this same repeated mantra. Everywhere we turn, it's being said, do your own thing. And so his first target was Eve. And he said this in Genesis 3 and verse 5. "For God knows that in the day you eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened, and you shall be as gods, knowing good and evil." And so they ate of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and they put themselves in God's place, that they could determine what was right or wrong. And again, the tradition in the Jewish world is that they ate on this day that we celebrate today. And so we don't eat on this day. Instead, we celebrate the putting away of this being Satan, the devil. Now here, the word knowing, where it says they'll know good and evil, is to ascertain to a point what is good and evil. In other words, beings could decide for themselves what is right and what is wrong. Ezekiel 28, for another familiar scripture. Ezekiel 28. As Satan later motivated the king of Tyre, that he had inspired the king of Tyre to the degree that he thought he was like a god. So we'll go to Ezekiel and verse 28. People mostly, I think, know what this chapter is all about. But here he influences the king of Tyre, and he says this, in verse 2, "Thus speaks the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, saying," oh, I'm in Jeremiah, I'm sorry, didn't go quite far enough. I want us to get this in verse 2, where he said, "Son of man, say to the prince of Tyre, thus says the Lord God, because your heart is lifted up, and you have said, I am a god, I sit in the seat of God in the midst of the seas, yet you are a man, and not God, though you set your heart as the heart of God. You know, this is the point that he set his mind that he was on a par with God. He was determined that he had the ability to set right and wrong because of his own thoughts. And this has been Satan's strategy down through the ages. And so the king fed on this concept. He fed on this idea because it was exalting him. And as a result, because he's thinking on the same exact wavelength, the same exact way as Satan, then God lifts his voice and he begins to speak directly to Satan in verse 14. You are the anointed cherub that covers, he says, and I've set you so. You are on the holy mountain of God, and you've walked up and down in the midst of the stones of fire, and you were perfect in your ways from the day that you were created until iniquity was found in you. And by the multitude of your merchandise, they fill the midst of you with violence. You have sinned, and therefore I will cast you as profane out of the mountain or government of God. And I will destroy you, O covering cherub, from the midst of the stones of fire. And so Satan had deceived this king of Tyre with this same philosophy that he deceived Eve and that he deceived the angels. And he believed he could decide for himself what is right and wrong. And he could wheel and deal with people in order to get more and more and more for himself. And he was merchandising. And you see that whole scheme and philosophy in our corporate world today. Wheeling and dealing, cheating, lying, corruption everywhere, paying off people to get their way. And that's what they're doing today. And it's the influence of Satan in this world. He's infiltrated, I think, every aspect of this life with this belief. And I remember reading through the Bible and I began to see how his spirit, that influence and that philosophy began to permeate Israel, who were to isolate themselves from the rest of the world and be different by following God's way. And yet this same influence began to affect them. And Saul, I think, was one of the first ones that we really read about here. He set himself above the law. Here he started out humble, but as he was leading the people of Israel, he began to think he was above the law. And so when God said, kill all the Amalekites, he didn't. He saved the best of the people and the best of the animals. And then he couldn't wait for Samuel to come and perform a sacrifice before they went to war. He decided he was going to do it when he wanted to do it. And he did it himself. And God said, he was now cast off. He lost out on everything. And the reason? Because he did whatever he wanted to do. He thought he was above God's law. He was following Satan's law, as it's written in the book, do as thy will. Later, Solomon, he made the same mistake. God said to the king that they were not to have a multitude of wives, and he got foreign wives to make these agreements and treaties with them. And then he was so intelligent, he wanted to learn from them, and he thought you can learn from everything in life. As he said, the truth is everywhere. And so he began to think he could go ahead and worship with these women, worship their gods, and he could learn from them. And eventually their beliefs began to permeate Israel more and more, until the point where Solomon died, Rehoboam takes over, and he says, you know, you thought my father was bad, wait till I'm in charge, I'm going to tax you even more, and I'm going to build more building projects and so on. And they split the kingdom, and they had a civil war. And it kept going on, and Israel was divided from Judah, and they became two separate peoples. And over time, this influence of Satan worked more and more on the people of Israel. Let's go to 1 Kings 19. But this is the history of Israel, and it's the history of, I think, any peoples. And Israel perhaps could last longer because they were indoctrinated with God's way, just as we were originally in our founding fathers, but now we are performing the same exact kind of behavior. We're exhibiting the exact kind of history that Israel did. But anyway, the people began to do more and more their own thinking, and when Jeroboam cut off the people from the north. He changed the holy days, and then what he did is he instituted calf worship in Dan and Bethel. And so he misled the people off the track of God, and it just got worse and worse and degenerated. Finally, King Ahab married a gal named Jezebel. And I don't know if you're aware of this, but Jezebel was the daughter of the king of Tyre, and she had his strong will. And eventually, she became the power behind Israel's throne. And she decided to officially, from the government, issue an advocation of Baal worship. And she professed, again, that same attitude of Satan. I'm going to do what I want no matter what it does and how it affects other people. So if you remember, Elijah was sent from God to Israel, and he was there preaching against Baal worship, and he had the grand test, remember, who was going to call fire down from heaven, and he kills all the prophets of Baal, and fire comes down and licks up every bit of the water and destroys his sacrifice and burns it up wholly, and the others could do nothing. And so there was a grand test. Everyone knew God's the true God. Everyone knew it. And the queen got news of it. And what do you think her response was? We better stop worshiping Baal and start worshiping God? No. Her response is, let's kill Elijah. So in 1 Kings 19, 1 and 2, and Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done, and how he had slain all the prophets with the sword. Then Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah, saying, so let the gods do to me, and more also, if I make not your life as the life of one of them by tomorrow at this time. And so he ran for his life, because she was going to kill him. But I want to give just another example, if you'll let me do this, and that is in chapter 21. I want you to see the mindset of this woman and see if it isn't the mindset of our corporate leaders. See if it isn't the mindset of our governmental leaders. See if this hasn't permeated our society today. Here's her philosophy. She finds the king pouting one day. The king is weak and he's pouting, and she asks him why, and he says, well, I wanted Naboth to give me his land and he wouldn't sell it to me. And so he turned his head against the pillow, turned it away from her, and he just pouted because she would have none of this. You understand? She was a powerful woman. She was going to have her way. You want that land? I'll get that land for you. 1 Kings 21:5. 1 Kings 21:5, and Jezebel, his wife, came to him and said, why is your spirit so sad and you don't eat bread? And he said to her, because I've spoke to Naboth the Jezreelite, and said unto him, give me your vineyard or money, or else, if it please thee, I'll give you another vineyard for it. And he answered, I will not give you my vineyard. And Jezebel, his wife, said unto him, do you not now govern the kingdom of Israel? Arise and eat bread. Let your heart be merry. I'll give you the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite. And she wrote letters to Ahab's name and sealed them with his seal and sent the letters to the elders and the nobles that were in the city dwelling in Naboth. And she wrote in the letters saying, proclaim a fast and set Naboth on high among the people. And set two men, sons of Belial, before him to bear witness against him, saying, you did blaspheme God and the king. And they carried him out and stoned him that he may die. Do you understand what she did? She lifted him up and made it look like he was lifting himself up, and then had the people lie saying that he had done this evil thing. So they stoned him and killed him. And the men of the city, even the elders and the nobles who were the inhabitants of the city, did what Jezebel had sent them to do. And it was written in the letters which she had sent unto them. And they proclaimed a fast, set him on a high among the people. There came two men, children of Belial, sat before him. The men of Belial witnessed against him in the presence of the people, saying, Naboth did blaspheme God and the king. They carried him forth out of the city, stoned him with stones, that he died. And they sent word to Jezebel that he was not alive, but he was dead. And then she said to her husband, take the land. You can take the land now. He's dead. You understand this whole idea of bullying or using your power to take advantage of others is this concept of I'm going to do what I want. I'm going to do what I want. And this is Satan's mantra, as I say. So eventually Israel got so bad, God intervened, and they were taken captive by Assyria. Let's go to 2 Chronicles 24. Be sure and put your phones on mute so we don't get feedback here. But eventually became so polluted and so horribly twisted that God took them captive, and they became lost to history to this day. Now Judah remained faithful for a time. But later, Judah's king married Jezebel's daughter, and her name was Athaliah. Her mother worshipped Baal, and she decided she would too. And so she married the king of Judah. King of Judah died, and she ruled over Judah. A Baal worshiper ruled over Judah as a woman, as the queen, for 6 years. And she dismantled the worship of the true God throughout Judah. And in 2 Chronicles 24:7, "For the sons of Athaliah, that wicked woman, had broken up the house of God, and also all the delicate things of the house of the Lord, did they bestow upon Balaam." Can you imagine such a thing? Jeremiah 44. But it happens because people are going to do, are set about, exalting themselves and doing their own thing. So, Jeremiah 44. As you know, things got worse and worse for Judah after this happened. But God, of course, sent a prophet to them to warn them about what they were doing, you know. He said eventually, Judah held fast for a while, but eventually they did, he said, what was worse than Israel. Because here was the queen now in charge, instituting Baal worship, putting away the things of God, using those things of God in the worship of Baal. And so finally he decided to send them into captivity. But before that, he sent Jeremiah to try to straighten any out who would straighten out. And he repeatedly warned them over and over. But they, of course, refused to listen because of this spirit that is being broadcast. You can do it. You can be all right. You'll be fine. You know, you're doing the right thing. Their gods were just fine for him. Do as you will. Jeremiah 44. Jeremiah 44 and verse 16. "As for the word," when he spoke to them, he couldn't speak because they disallowed him from going to the temple. He was imprisoned. But he sent Barak, and he says, "As for the word that you spoke unto us in the name of the Lord, we will not hearken to you. But we will certainly do whatsoever thing goes forth out of our own mouth, to burn incense to the queen of heaven, to pour out drink offerings unto her, as we've done, we and our fathers, our kings and our princes, in the cities of Judah and in the streets of Jerusalem. For we had plenty of victuals, and were well, and we saw no evil." And so they took God's mercy for granted. But you see the same thing, don't you? Don't you see this theme repeating itself over and over? We're going to do whatever comes out of our mouth. We're not going to listen to you. And it's the same today. I mean, there's churches of God all over the United States, all over the world, and they're preaching, repent, repent. This is going to end terribly. And everybody's doing what? They're worshiping to the Queen of Heaven, worshiping on Christmas and Easter and all that. They think that anyone preaching to go back to God's standards is nutty, a little deranged, or something wrong with them. So you understand that Satan's method, his methodology, his philosophy, is to get people to believe in themselves. And he is called the prince of the power of this world. He is called the god of this world. And he broadcasts in emotions. And today he influences modern Israel, just like he did ancient Israel, in the same very way. And he sends what the Bible calls her fiery darts. And what those are thoughts. They're emotions. They're expressions that the mind thinks of. And this doctrine of his, this doctrine that he loves so dearly, is perpetrated through everyone's minds. And it's heady. People will take a hold of it and they'll run with it, you know. And so this whole idea and philosophy has affected millions of people today, that they should do whatever they want to do whatever they feel. They refuse to be limited by rules that are outside themselves. And it's so appealing to human nature because it makes you feel bigger. It gives you a sense of confidence, you know, and it feeds our ego. And so people have a tendency, human nature is almost like programmed to accept this kind of a doctrine that comes from Satan. And so we have psychologists today that what do? They teach you to not repent, they teach you to be able to assuage your guilt and not feel guilty about the things that you do or think or feel. And that's one of the things that happens. We have New Age theology today that teaches you what? You can be your own God. The same thing that was taught to Eve. You know, we're to live according to our own personal values. That should be our guideline. Today, hundreds of different songs that people sing and that they listen to. And if you ask your kids, they would be able to repeat the words and sing them. But they continue to influence us in this direction over and over again. If you remember, I've been alive forever. I write the songs. No kidding. Especially when you examine the words of those songs. Whitney Houston made it popular, The Greatest Love of All. Do you know what the greatest love of all? It's learning to love yourself. That's the greatest love of all. Don't you see this same motive, this same kind of philosophy being preached? Rap star Jay-Z, who our president is going to go visit, has "Do What You Wilt" on his hooded sweatshirt. If you go online, you'll see it. He's Red Crowley, and they believe that. Dozens of rock stars today have Red Crowley, and they believe in it. And it is connected to our human nature. Do what you will. Do what you want. And he's used rock music to purvey this theme over and over. As Crowley said, do what you will. And so the Beatles had on their Magical Mystery Tour, they had a picture of Crowley on the front of the album. And the satanic words began to become more and more popular. And the Stones followed up with an album called Satanic Majesty's Request. And everybody liked the Stones. Ozzy Osbourne formed Black Sabbath. They released their album, We Sold Our Soul to Rock and Roll. And that's what they're selling to teenagers today. Sell yourself to rock and roll. 1997, there was an interview with Osbourne, and he said this, "I've been sued by about 25 people claiming their kids committed suicide from listening to my music." You just think about that. What is being purveyed, what is in the air, what is being broadcast in the music. The next decade brought on a procession, if you will, of drugged out rock stars, and they were all trying to make it. And by make it, it meant make big money, get big recording contracts. But they learned that if you want big money and you want big contracts, there's something you have to do. You have to have more satanic symbols and even have satanic rituals on stage. And that's happening all over America now in the music industry. Marilyn Manson, he sells WWJD bracelets at his concert. Do you remember those? That used to be a fad that people went through and are supposed to be, you know, what would Jesus do? You know what he turned it to? We want Jesus dead. And he sells bracelets for that purpose. He's lead singer of the Lord of the New Church, sang their song, "There is no grace, there is no guilt, there is the law, do what thou wilt." That's it, over and over again. Now, just permeates rock music. So for us, we've got to realize this. In this life, we've got to resist this mantra of his. We've got to resist doing what we want to do. That's the struggle we have, but it's not in just one place. It isn't just in music. I mean, if you go to the digital games that the kids are all playing today, it's just filled with this kind of stuff. It's everywhere. And so it says in Ephesians 6:12, we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers and rulers of darkness of this world and spiritual wickedness in high places. We have a massive array, you know, as Crowley wrote, his cohorts, you know, his top leaders that he was acquainted with. We're wrestling against them, and they are everywhere. They permeate almost everything. Consider how he's used video games. Dante's Inferno was released on PS3 and Xbox 360. It looks like an exciting adventure on the outside, but what you're actually doing is entering into hell. To play this game, you fight demons and evil spirits for a chance to save a soul. And if you're good enough, you can take on Lucifer himself. You earn bonus points by killing unbaptized babies. Dragon's Age Origins. God goes mad, and he curses the world. The witch attacks believers, and players can have sex with her, and she can even give birth to a god. These are some of the video games that are out there. Genesis 6. These gamers have found Satan, the devil, and they are his. Right now, they are his. Someday they won't be, but right now they are. As Christ said to Peter, the devil wants you. And he wants to sift you like wheat. And the devil has the power to do that. And he is doing it with people in this world. And in World War I and World War II, everybody was forming alliances and they were building their armies. And that's what's happening right now, this minute, especially in the Arab community. You know, it's going to be an Arab takeover. It's not just going to be an Arab Spring. But you understand my point is behind all of this is do what you want. You see those protests? Are those people under any kind of control at all? They're just ripping and tearing and blowing things up and burning things, whether they're civilians or what. And they hate us. They hate us. And they hate the God we serve. And so it's growing more and more. You know, on television, it's really funny to me that on, for example, South Park, I mean, the devil is everywhere in TV and in movies. But in South Park, they portray him as kind of this heavyset, plump, spoiled devil that loves Saddam Hussein, but Saddam Hussein kind of dumps the devil. He doesn't like him. He has this love affair. And so, you know, he gets rid of Saddam Hussein. So the TV series is called The Reaper. It's based around Satan. He has a devilish, handsome man in this one, the leading man, while ruling hell. From time to time, people escape from hell, and so he makes deals with other people. Rather than putting them in hell, they become people that go out and find those who escaped hell and bring them back. And they're called Reapers, and they once said this, "I'm a bounty hunter for Satan. He isn't tough enough to catch escaped souls." That's what's on television now. You can go to HBO and they have True Blood. That's the name of another HBO series. And in this one, there are vampires involved. And there's a sex scene and nudity in every single scene in that television program. Every single one where there is nudity in it. And there is constant drug use. But what they've done is they've made people getting drugs, but the drug is always blood. That's what it is. That's their blood. Now, who can deny that Satan doesn't influence some of these programs? People have become numb to what is appalling and what is disgusting. And so horrible themes are just considered what? Entertainment. And people do some very terrible things. Hundreds of movies about Satan. You know, they'll tell you, go online, they'll say the 40 best movies with Satan, you know. Those are the best ones. The other ones are B-rated, probably, movies. Exorcist remains the number one most frightening and most satanic movie yet. It's gone also to be the most successful movie. Can you imagine a movie like that grossing $400 million? That's how much money that made, because that's how many people went to see it. And I'm sure it affects people in one way or another, you know. Maybe even worse to me, and I really believe this, more devastating is not the movies about Satan, but it's what the movies do without talking about Satan. And that is, you see fornication, you see adultery, you know, you see over and over, like in a Mel Gibson's movie, a Lethal Weapon or something like that, the protagonist, the good guy, the guy that saves everybody, never plays by the rules. He smokes, he has women, he does whatever he wants, he gets drunk, you know, anything he wants to do, he does. And he's able to get the bad guys, you know, which are like more organized and ugly, and the other guy's cute, you know, the good guy's cute. That's the only difference. Because he's doing the same thing they are. And so what we get here is an attitude being pervaded by television, by the movies, of this theme. Do whatever you want. Can you see it in the movies? Can you see it all through them? It's not by following the rules. That never leads to success. It's always being different, doing what you want. And it's a subtle kind of thing that is, I think, worse. And I remember I took my kids to CET. They wanted to see it so bad, and here's this extraterrestrial comes, and he's a real nice, huggable kind of extraterrestrial. And they hide him in the bedroom because they can't let the parents know. You can't trust your parents. You understand my point? It's just one little thing in this movie, but my point is, look at the attitude it puts into the children. You can't trust your parents. You can't trust the system. You can't. You don't follow what you should follow, the rules. You know, don't do that. You have to do what you believe is right, on the other hand. And so you see it. You see it in the kids' movies. You see it in the adult movies. You see it all the time, you know. And so they make things like adultery and fornication and homosexuality and make those things seem like they're just normal things and that we should accept them. And we have accepted those things. And now anybody who doesn't accept those things is a bigot or commits a hate crime by denying it. Don't you see how things have been twisted around in such a short time? They're upside down. Do whatever you want, and it's fine. You know, it's just fine. Natural, normal, and accepted. Not wrong if it's done by consenting adults. Genesis 6:5. And God saw that the wickedness of man was great on the earth, and that every imagination of his thoughts of his heart was evil continually. And I think this is where we're at today, and we are climaxing. We're coming to a massive head where the boil is going to bust. We have become like these people. The imagination of man's heart is self-centered, and that's bad enough. But influenced by Satan, man's nature has become abusive and horrible in many cases, and he does hideous acts. We're reaching this same level today as they did in that day. Imagine this, how Satan has used television, he's used movies, he's used records, he's used games for kids, and he's used religion in particular. And I know that he has done things so that people, not realizing it, think they're worshiping God and they think they're doing good. And like the Aztecs, the ancient Aztecs, they had hundreds and hundreds of gods, but they had special ceremonies where they would take a young girl, cut off her head, and then they would flay her skin off, and the priest would wear the skin of this girl, and that was their sacrifice. That's their way of religion. But you understand how far it goes. They thought they were doing good by doing the most hideous, atrocious, and horrible acts. And it wasn't any different because of Christianity. When Christianity came along, it was turned upside down by the Catholic Church, and then they had the Crusades, and they killed people, and then they tortured people through the Spanish Inquisition, and they would torture them, and they'd put them on a rack with spikes, and they'd pull their body apart with horses. They would pour lead down people's throats so that they'd tell them, you can't preach what you're preaching, this will stop you from talking. But they did this in the name of Christ, and as it says, they'll kill you thinking they're doing God a service. But you understand my point. How does this all happen? How could these people stand by and watch somebody else be tortured like that? They had to be thinking, what? I can do this. I feel this way. I think these guys are bad. I hate them. So I can do what I want. And that is Satan's theme. And it's the way he begins to corrupt every aspect of life. And so now it's so funny, he has agents all over, as it calls them, angels of light. But, you know, it was, 1804, and the slaves revolted in Haiti. And the first thing they did was they sacrificed a pig and dedicated their nation to Satan. And as a result, voodoo fills their lives. And they have witch doctors, and the witch doctors cast spells. And you know what's really horrifying? Those spells, those agents of Satan, make some of those spells come true. And that's why they believe in it. But they are living in the age of darkness, utter darkness, and they don't know how they got there. But you know how it started? With a revolt and saying, we're going to do what we want. Out with the old, in with us, we're going to do it. And it's the same kind of thing, of course, that's happening now in the Arab Spring, or fall or winter or whatever it is now. But it's continuing on, is my point. So he works with people with superstitions, he can bring them into his kingdom of darkness. And he has managed to leave a horrible mark on Christianity, and that's why many atheists just mock Christianity because of the horrors that they have done during their time, killing and torturing others. So today, believing in the Bible is often makes you a person who's ostracized. And as we read in the reading today, we can expect persecution to finally come. And even now, they are persecuting people that are Bible believers in the world, and they're killing them and they're torturing them. Matthew 4. Yes, it's amazing the power of this concept of doing your own thing. You know, Satan has used Jesus Christ, and he's even used the Bible to lead people astray. And his theme is always, let the people choose. And once they, for example, in Protestantism, it's a purveyor of this theme in the extreme. But people don't even realize it, but they're saying, basically, their preachers are begging people to accept Jesus instead of realizing he chooses us. They say, you choose. You accept him. And then once you accept him, you'll be free. You'll be free, but are you free of sin? No. You're free of God's law. That's their whole mantra, isn't it? That's their whole philosophy. Is you can do whatever you want to do as long as you have love in your heart. Well, everybody has love in their heart, but it's not for the true God, it's for themselves. Don't you see how the game is played and how the people are played and how they fall into his hands? I hope we can see, and I hope we can come to hate this theme of doing our own thing. You know, I looked up, as it says here in Matthew 4 and verse 8, again the devil took him up to an exceeding high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and the glory of them, and he said to him, all these things will I give you if you'll fall down and worship me. Can you imagine that? The governments are out there belong to Satan. They absolutely do, and they are self-serving, and now they have gotten, and as they do, everyone comes to a point where they reach the height of their golden age, and they become brutal and mean and harsh and cruel. You know, nobody today, I don't think, thinks that our government is really here to serve other people. Everyone knows the people in government are there for what reason? Serve yourself. That's what it is. And they'll tell you that the people that get elected to Congress or to the Senate, they go in with average incomes and come out millionaires because of the lobbying, because they're merchandising just like Satan did with the angels, getting what they can for the self, doing what they want and how they feel. And if getting more money is good for them, what do you think they think? Well, this is good. I think this is right. I think this is good for me. I'm going to do it. And that's what they do. But also, the governments become very cruel. And I looked up war crimes on the internet, and I'm telling you the truth. I cannot tell you, because it is so horrible what people have done to other people who were in submission to them when they had power over them. I cannot tell you everything, how bad it is. But you know, from whatever education we have, you know that how the Nazis treated the Jews like dogs. And they took them to their concentration camps, and they treated them like less than animals. And they would do experiments on them. I remember my son did a paper on this. They would put people in a huge kind of pool of lye. And they would put men, women, and children, different ages. And then they would see how long it took them to die and who would last the longest. They would take pieces of people's brains out, just open up their skull and take pieces of the brain out, and they'd record how much loss do they suffer, what are they like. And they just did this sort of mechanically and methodically, and they didn't give any concern to the people at all. They were hurting, you know. You understand how this works, that you can think you're doing good and you can be doing evil, and the men that built the cement drain lines to drain the blood off Those men thought they were serving the state, and that was the highest good. The same thing with the Japanese. I read in accounts on the internet about World War II, and the Japanese actually killed more Chinese who were innocent civilians. They killed more than those who died in Nagasaki and, what's that other city? Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And so more died than that. And what they did was they just had these innocent Chinese people, and they had them prisoner, and they would take and have their young troops as practice for battle bayonet them over and over again until they died. Millions of people. And one of the commanding officers there was just talking openly about it, and he said, well, what I did was, we were bored, and so for entertainment, we'd torture these guys, cut off their ears, their tongues. We'd do that, and then we'd send them on fire. And that was what they did for entertainment. I saw the pictures, and their faces were smiling in laughter as they did this. That's not human. It isn't human. That's Satan influencing people, thinking we can do whatever we want. No, you can't. There's always devastating consequences. And we need to see this even in our own lives, is my point today. How bad does it have to get? How bad does it have to get? The earth is being poisoned at the hands of greedy corporate men. Science Daily wrote this: about 40% of the deaths worldwide are caused by water, air, and soil pollution, concluded a Cornell researcher. These contribute to the malnourishment and disease susceptibility of 3.7 billion people. And so as this goes on in the corporate world, crime accelerates. During the 30-year period of 1960 to 1990, there was a 560% increase in violent crime, more than 400% increase in illegitimate births, quadrupling of divorces, a tripling of the percentage of children living in single-parent homes, more than 200% increase in teenage suicide rate, and a drop of 75 points in the average SAT scores of the students. We are at or near the top rates in abortion, divorces, and unwed births. We lead the world, industrial-wide world, in murder, rape, and violent crime. They're just doing what they want. They do whatever they want. They have no rules that stop them. And our city, our state, our country is becoming more and more just like Sodom. Just like Sodom and Gomorrah. And we are going to suffer the fate of it. You know, unthinkingly, we harm others to get what it is we want. And this is the way of Satan, the devil. It's his modus operandi. And he has infected the world with this virus of a philosophy. Never forget he's the prince of this world. Never forget he's the god of this world. He's not some puny, small metaphor. He's very real and very evil, and his influence pervades all things. And he has enormous influence on the earth. Millions have suffered excruciating pain from the crucible of war and lawlessness and terror attacks and famine and disease. Let's go to Leviticus 16. I knew I'd take a little bit more time on this, so I apologize to you. But I want to get this point across, you know. It's, to me, so important that so much pain and suffering has had its origin in this philosophy of Satan and down through the ages. And so you understand, here we are today, and we are fasting, and we're going without. And there's a lesson in this, and that lesson is this. You understand, there's a law that we follow of fasting today. Now, I think that the Jewish tradition could have some truth to it, that they ate on the Day of Atonement. My point is, our flesh pulls on us. It pulls on us, doesn't it? We want what we want. Right now, I want a glass of water really bad, but I'm not going to get it because it's against the law of God. Okay, but what about all the other parts of our lives? When you get angry, when somebody does something that hurts you, what do you want to do back? You understand what I'm getting at? It's the same theme all the way down the line, and eventually that being who pervades this is going to be put away. He's going to have a holiday, and that's what we celebrate today. So back to Leviticus here. We've got to make, and that's what this day teaches us. We go without, and yet we still obey God, and we've got to understand this is the theme from God and from His side, that we are to go without. We're not to give in to just feelings and think that it's okay because they're ours. But we've got to restrain ourselves and do what is right, not how we feel and not how we think. Okay? Not how the world influences and not what they do. We're going to do what God does. And that's what this day is all about. We're going to learn this lesson, and we should learn it from this day. The devil's going to take a holiday. Historically, this celebration was carried out with great ceremony, and it was done once a year. None of the people ever made a sacrifice on this one. It was just the high priest. He was acting as God in this, as he made a sacrifice for himself and cleansed himself. And then he picked one of two goats. 16, verse 3. Thus shall Aaron come to the holy place with a young bullock for a sin offering and a ram for a burnt offering. And he shall put on the holy linen coat, and he shall have the linen breeches upon his flesh, and he shall be girded with a linen girdle. And with this linen mitre shall he be attired. And these are holy garments. Therefore he shall wash his flesh in water, and so put them on. And he shall take the congregation of Israel, two kids of the goats of a sin offering, and one ram for a burnt offering. And Aaron shall offer his bullock of the sin offering, which is for himself, make atonement for himself and his house. Then he takes the two goats, and he presents them before the Lord at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And Aaron shall cast lots on the two goats, one for the Lord, and the other lot for the scapegoat. So these two goats represented, one represented Christ, the other one represented Satan. And they cast lots so that God would choose which goat was the purest and would be for Christ, and which goat was the least pure, and it would be for Azazel, a demonic name for the devil himself. And so pick this up here in 9, and Aaron shall bring the goat upon the Lord's lot fell and offer him for a sin offering. That was Christ dying for us, but the goat on which the lot fell to be the scapegoat shall be presented alive before the Lord to make an atonement with him and to let him go for a scapegoat into the wilderness. And so he was put out into the wilderness where he was unable to affect anybody. And this is picturing the putting on of the hands on the head of this goat of the high priest. He was attributing all the sins of mankind on this goat, and he was put in the wilderness. And that picture, as we go to Revelation 20, that pictured the putting away of Satan. And one day he's going to be forced to take a holiday from his evil that he has worked on this earth. And so it says in verse 1, I saw an angel come down from heaven, having the key of the bottomless pit and a great chain in his hand. And he laid hold of the dragon, that old serpent, which is the devil and Satan, and he bound him for 1,000 years, cast him into the bottomless pit, shut him up, and set a seal on him that he should deceive the nations no more till the 1,000 years should be fulfilled, and after that he'll be loosed with a little seat for a little season. So he's going to be put away from this earth. No longer going to be able to affect mankind's thoughts and feelings. No more fiery darts are going to come out. And Christ is going to be the God of this world, and the saints are going to rule with him. You know, but so far, man has only known sin, anger, and hostility, and selfishness. And he's seen the way of Satan. Now, for once in a lifetime, every man is going to be able to see what is God's way is really like and how it prospers. They've never had that opportunity. They've never been able to make the choice. They just went along with what they felt, you know, whatever they thought was good, you know. And God is going to heal the terrible diseases. He's going to change things so that the music is going to be uplifting. It's going to be inspiring and beautiful. And books and movies are going to teach lessons to people of what is good, what really is good. And we're going to learn from those things and enjoy them And there's going to be a culture that's going to be pure and clean and wholesome, one where the children can play in the streets, and one where people are friends with one another, and they have the respect for one another and the respect for other races, knowing that these are children of God, and not just kill them for our entertainment, as what happened in many wars down through the ages, because he is the one that runs the governments of this world. But can you imagine a time when industry is not going to be just to create wealth for some persons? Instead, it's going to be for the betterment of mankind, making products that man can enjoy and making them available for a reasonable price. Can you imagine people valuing God's law, men and women around the world living in peace and families flourishing in happiness and enjoying the world and all the good things God has given us in a mode of thankfulness and gratitude instead of get and get more for yourself when they learn the give way of life? It's going to be a wonderful time when he takes his holiday. So let's read a scripture and finish up here where it was read during the reading. That's James 4. James 4. You know, my point that I wanted to bring out today, I guess more than anything else, was that the world that we live in now has a being who is Satan, and he has enormous power to influence us. And, you know, I want us to ask today, what kind of pulls does the music we listen to have on us? Does it jangle our nerves, or does it soothe us and uplift us? What is it? Is it pure? Does it make you think of things that are pure and wholesome? Or does the music you listen to pervade the hostility that exists? Because a lot of it is there's yelling in the microphones, there's screaming in them. You know, what about the TV and the movies that we watch? Are they having a subtle influence on what we think in our conscience is right and wrong? Is it happening to us to a smaller degree, perhaps, but still happening, you know? In the politics in this world, are we driven to try to take a side and hate the other guy? You understand? Because neither one is going to be any good. No one goes in that system and comes out clean. And so my point is, are we being affected by this world and this attitude about doing what we want? Because Satan exerts enormous pressure on us all. And he does it for a reason. He wants us. He wants to sift us like wheat. He wants us dead. You know, and so he tries to influence us in every one of these kinds of ways. Do we resist? Do we see it? And do we resist it? We resist today the pulls of hunger, don't we? So we know we can do it. But what about the other pulls that come on us? Erotic pulls. What comes on us when it comes to wanting to eat more than we should, perhaps? What is it comes over us when we want to see a movie, you know, and we want to see it because of the adrenaline it sends in us, but it's got horrible themes in it. You know, we need to be aware of where he is and who he is and what he's doing to us. And so today we celebrate the day that he takes a holiday, but I want to remind you of this. He's still alive now. He is still working. James 4:5-8. Do you think the scriptures say in vain the spirit that dwells in us lusts to envy? Do you know what that means? It means the spirit that we have, our human nature, always wants what it wants. That's what it means. And every story throughout the Bible is one that shows you people wanting what they want. But God gives more grace. Wherefore he said, God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Now here's what we've got to do. Submit ourselves, therefore, to God and resist the devil, and he will flee from us. And so you understand, we all want what we want. There isn't a single one of us that doesn't want what we want. We always want more. I remember Mr. Armstrong giving a sermon once. He said, prepare to reduce your state of living. And a guy walked out the door with me and said, oh, I was thinking about increasing it. Well, that's because we all want that. We want more out of this life. And so Satan will prey on those things that we want. and he'll make them seem more important than what they are, more important. But it says that God will give us more grace. That is, he'll give us the strength to overcome. But we must resist him, Satan, and submit to God. And if so, he'll take a holiday from us. He won't be there. He will flee from us because we're not susceptible. And that's an attitude we've got to develop, and that's what this day is telling us. It really is, you know, that if we do this, resist the devil and submit to God, we actually will become God. We'll know what's right and wrong. We understand God's way is right, and we won't be pulled in the other way, you know. Won't be pulled by this flesh to do our own thing. We will build a character that is fitting for the kingdom of God. So each year, I hope that we will understand this principle more deeply as we celebrate the Day of Atonement. That we'll see that Satan's strategy is for us to do our own thing, not God's thing, but do our own thing. And if he can just get us to move a little bit, then he can get us to move a little bit more. And sometimes he can take people out by that same strategy. And so we've got to put him out of our lives and eventually replace him and replace his demons. And atonement proves to us that we can do this. We can overcome the pulls that come on us. And we today overcome the pull of the flesh to eat. And we do it for Christ's sake. And that shows us something. We can do the same thing with television, with movies, with music, with everything that pulls on us. We have the power to do it. The issue is, will we exercise that power? But by fasting today, you know you can. You can resist the pulls of the flesh. So this is, in one part, the meaning of atonement. And I want us to put that in our minds today, that we have the law. We know right from wrong. And our job is to strive to do the right and resist doing the wrong. And let's set that this year as our goal for the next year, because with God's help, we can do it. We can succeed and overcome the influence of the devil.